My name is Jackie Anderson, for those of you who don't know me, and it's so nice to see you here today. I am a teacher in our school district. There's actually quite a few people in our congregation that are connected to the school district. I think, in fact, when I started thinking about people, and as I saw people come in, I'm like, oh yeah, and that person, oh, and that person. So what I'm sharing with you today is very particular to my role in the district. And there are so many people who work with children and teachers and systems in our district that their story might be a bit of a different one. And I just want to be just say that up front. So I'm a teacher, and I've always wanted to be a teacher. I've been a teacher for many years. In fact, when I was young, my dad, we didn't have Sunday school during church, and my dad and I would write notes. And years ago, when my parents were moving, we were clearing out their closet, and we uncovered my baby book. And in that box was a church bulletin where my dad had written, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And I had written back in my seven-year-old printing, "I want to be a teacher." So, and I wanted to be a teacher because I fell in love with my grade one teacher. My grade one teacher made me feel seen and valued. And probably for many of you, when you think of teachers you know, or teachers you've had, that are your favorites, it's probably because of how they made you feel. Right? You might not remember all the things they taught you or what they said. You might not even remember exactly what subject they taught you or what grade it was, but you just remember that teacher made you feel special and valued and cared for. So I am so grateful for that clear call of vocation so early in my life. I know that doesn't happen for everyone, but it did happen for me, and it has never wavered. I am a teacher, and probably whatever context you put me in, I will become a teacher again. Like, if I, when I'm asked to volunteer for some other thing, it's because I will start taking over things like a teacher does. If I'm having a conversation with you, you might notice, oh, she's starting to sound like a teacher. So it's just so part of who I am. And I'm so grateful for that. I would say it brought together my God-given desire and maybe even gift for relating and connecting with people. It brought that together with the places in the world where that needs to happen. So where the world needed me, God has placed a gift and a desire, and that's been a beautiful vocation for me. So in my current role, I am the early learning lead teacher, which means that I do some mentor teaching. I go into classrooms, so I work with little children still. I come alongside teachers in projects or things they want to learn about. I offer a lot of professional development in the community. So all those Pro D days that we have, I'm probably running something that day. I also connect with senior leaders. So my bosses, I'm in this sort of in-between stages. I have lots of levels that I have a connection to. So with senior leaders around creating initiatives in our district, I work with them in teams that way. And I also connect with people in my role across districts, all across Vancouver Island and even the province. So I have lots of places where I'm connected, and I get to see the beautiful things that happen in education revealed. I have been inspired by Micah's metaphor last year of bridges, and how as we are ambassadors in our cities doing our work, we're bridges, we're bridging places. I really was inspired by that, and I remembered that there was something about bridges about tension. You need tension to have a good bridge. You also need compression. So any way you build it, a bridge will have tension and compression. And I can tell you, I feel that as a bridge, right? I do feel that. I was also really inspired by Micah's sermon a number of years ago, 3 years ago. I take notes on my phone. This is the beautiful thing about having a phone that you can take notes on, is I found it. It was from Advent in 2020, and Micah was speaking about Mary's visit to Elizabeth and how Elizabeth's first words to her were blessing. And the importance of us blessing each other, particularly olders to youngers. But I want to say to anyone here, if you feel like you're too young to have a life story that blesses people, that is not true. As a young person, if you have experienced God in your life, that's a story you have to share, and it will be an encouragement to someone. So the act of blessing is a gift we give each other, and it's something we practice together. I think the best part of my work is that every day I get to speak blessing. A couple of weeks ago, Yuri gave a sermon, and he talked about being pure in heart. And when we're pure in heart, we see God at work. I love the double entendre of all those words. It's so great. And he said when he would hope that in his work, he has people from all different countries that he works with. He's got family in different places, different countries, friends in different provinces here. And if everyone was to come together and share stories about Yuri, they would all agree, yeah, that's the Yuri we know. That's the Yuri we like. He's such a great guy. Yeah, that's the Yuri I know. And I think this verse reminds me of that. Little children, let us not love with words or speech, but love with actions and truth. A number of years ago, I took a course from Regent College on Christian teaching with David Smith, and I liked how he arranged that verse on this slide, just to remind us that love is at the center of that. In my work, I cannot use my Christian words. I can't use them. I cannot start a meeting with teachers with prayer. I can't encourage children to talk about God when they have troubles. So, therefore, how do I do my faith at my work? I think I do it with actions and in truth. And when Yuri was talking about having that integrity, that everywhere he goes, someone that would be true about him. He has this true line that people can relate to or resonate. They remember that about him. That's what I would hope my role is, that I, in wherever I go, in all these places in my work, I have integrity. I want to introduce you to someone that I learned about in this course. His name is John Amos Comenius. I don't know if any of the other teachers here know about him. He's our superstar, just letting you know. He was the man who wrote the very first public education curriculum in 1658. And this was his dream, his vision, that the entire world will be a garden of delight for God, for people, and all things. That is an amazing vision. And when I think about education, the field that I work in, when I think about what is God's desire for that? What is God's desire for education? I can't think of a better answer than that. That the whole world would become a garden of delight for God, all people, and all things. So he wrote in 1658, The Orbis Pictus Sensualum, the Great Didactic is the other translation for it. And this is the cover of it, where you see the scholar. He's wearing robes, so we know he's a scholar. And he's inviting a child. He says, the master says, come, child, learn wisdom with me. And you can see God's wisdom is radiating down from heaven. They're out in nature. They're walking along a road. It's a journey. And there's a city in the background. His goal in writing this curriculum was, I mean, this is impressive, 1658, for all children, boys and girls, of every village, town, parish, so rich or poor, doesn't matter. His vision was that all children would be educated quickly, pleasantly, and thoroughly. Wouldn't that be lovely? In all things, right? And so to that end, when he was writing this, he wanted it to be beautiful to look at. So the pictures are all woodcuts. But it is very much rooted in God as creator, and where we are in this world, and how we build places of beauty for ourselves and each other. So here you see this picture of a storm. This is God's wind, and it's blowing down a house. So in the next picture, we have all the parts of how do you make a house. Let's build a good house so it doesn't fall down. So everything from cutting the wood to drying the wood and how to measure the wood and how to put it together. You see all those little numbers beside the little characters. That's then connected to the bigger text of this is what they're doing. He wanted, the alphabet was all taught with creatures from creation, and things from creation. He was really intent that children would be rooted in where they are and what God wants for us here to be, to live a good and beautiful and true life together. In fact, later on in the book, there is a section on planting a garden, planting a seed and how to tend a garden. And then there's a chapter on harvest. You take those seeds and you now are harvesting them. And then there's a chapter on baking bread and serving a meal. So that arc, I mean, I just think if we were to have that vision of education now, I mean, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. We want to be aware of how and where we see the good in creation so we can nurture it, harvest it, share it with others for the blessing of community. I mean, that's the whole goal. And to me, that's just, that purpose aligns so beautifully with God's redemption purposes for our world. So this speaks deeply to the heart of my faith and my vocation, where my greatest joy, relating to people, meets the world's need, to quote my one of my favorite writers, Frederick Buechner. So to be connected with people in a way that reveals how God is at work in the world, I love that. And I can't necessarily tell the people I'm working with, look, that's God at work in the world, but I know it's God at work in the world. And so what I then do is I speak blessing into that space. I call out that good, I name it, and I can say, oh, look at the good work you're doing. Comenius believed, and I would say this is still true, regardless of all the changes in curriculum, policy, whatever, these three pillars of education, I think, still remain. Education is about the spiritual and moral development of children. And I would say that is still true. If you look at our schools, they are very much engaged in developing and nurturing respect and kindness and goodness and generosity with others. We want to build, we want to create citizens, good citizens. When I see some of the things that's happening in high schools, we've got some people here who work in high schools, teenagers do amazing, amazing things. We have some young people in our community who are deeply concerned about justice and kindness and advocacy in their community. That's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. That's what teachers and schools do with young people. And I would say, even though we haven't been able to talk so much about, like, and label it with the capital S spiritual element of learning, that is coming more and more into play. It was starting to develop before COVID when we knew that the emotional well-being of children was really paramount to their success at school. But COVID just blew that all up, right? We all of a sudden now we know the emotional and spirit and social well-being of everyone is important for our communities. So that is leading to more conversations about how are you well in your soul? What does that look like? What does that feel like? What does that sound like? And I would also say from a different angle, but it's coming to the same end, all of our conversations around reconciliation and Indigenous stories in Canada, the Indigenous people's worldview is so connected to the Creator and the land that their way of thinking about being together in community is actually opening doors for us to start talking about that. So isn't that amazing? God is taking something so unexpected And he's helping to create a space where we can now actually talk with people about your spiritual self. Who are you really? Who do you want to be? It's so awesome. And then there's the other part is around the other pillar about justice and community. If you think about your classrooms as a child, I'm sure you can all think of those kids who were on the margins. Maybe it was you. Maybe you didn't fit in with the other families in your community. We know that those children are in our classrooms. Those families are in our community. How can we advocate for them and give dignity to their stories? Equity is a huge issue in education right now. Creating a level playing field, removing barriers so that all children can succeed and experience the good things that education can offer them. And then beauty and generosity. I have twice this year now, and it's only February, I guess starting in November, the first time someone heard, I heard about it, was a study that's been done on the importance of experiencing awe, A-W-E. They've done studies on this. The importance of experiencing awe, being in the presence of something greater, more magnificent, more beautiful than us, and what that does for children. It's in the context of education. Now, we know, as believers, we know we've had experiences of awe because we stand in the presence on Sundays. Sometimes we're overcome with awe when we sing, right? Or when we hear scripture read and it goes, ooh, right here. Oh, man, God is so big. God is so great. God is so good. So I think these three pillars, regardless of all the generations that have come and gone and permutations of curriculum and policy, I would say these things are still true in education. We are, and we're having a resurgence of appreciation for the spiritual, the beauty, the justice piece of education, which is to me such a good thing. And in my work, I get to see all of these things happening. I get to witness them in classrooms and in conversations with children. There's something so amazing when you're talking to a little six-year-old and they're like, I did it! I did it! I didn't think I could do it, and I did it. And right then, I'm like, this child is becoming something. In this moment, something has happened in their heart. And I want to grab onto that and name it for them. Look what you're becoming, right? Speaking that blessing, encouraging that good. I can do it with colleagues when I bring them together and we really wrestle with how can we help each other? How can we learn from each other and become better at what we do so that we experience better community together and we experience all the goodness in our classrooms for our students. And I also get to experience it with my senior leaders when I sit in teams with them and I can bless them. I can recognize the good that they're trying to do and encourage them in that and say, how can I help you? How can I be of service in that way? I'm also taking part in shaping a system as best I can, and trust me, I am very well aware that the education system is a monolith system, and it does not turn on a dime, and there are so many pieces of it that, for lack of a better word, they squash people, or they make things harder than they should be. But as best I can, in my sphere of influence, I can work towards shaping a system that cares for people and seeks their good. Now, I'm also aware that a bridge is intended for two-way traffic. So I'm a bridge between students and teachers. I have this going on. I'm between teachers and teachers, so this going on. I've got teachers and administrators and senior leaders. I've got this going on back and forth. So I very much at times feel like I'm a conduit or a messenger. And don't shoot the messenger, I sometimes have to remind people. But like I'm very much a place where things go back and forth. But I would also say that I have a second dimension where I'm a bridge. I'm a bridge as a believer in Jesus and a secular system. So as much as I bring something from my faith to my work, recognizing blessing, your gifts, being able to encourage the good in your life, seeing God's purpose at work and saying, yes, that one, how can we nurture that? How can we cultivate that? As much as I do that, I can honestly say my work has shaped my faith. My work has encouraged me, provoked me to wrestle with things that are hard. I really don't think if I wasn't a teacher, I would not be as engaged in the work of reconciliation and learning about the Indigenous stories in Canada. I can honestly say that. How would I have learned about it? You have to be very proactive if you're just an ordinary citizen going about your business. But for me and my work, I don't have that choice. It is front and center every day, all day. And I'm so grateful for that. I can tell you, at first that was hard. It's like, I don't know. First of all, what? How did I not know about this? This is so terrible. My heart broke. Blah. But then also, then like, okay, wait a second. So what does this mean? Like, how does the church respond to that when we've done so much damage? And, oh my goodness, okay, now I really can't talk about Jesus. Like, you know, like going through all of those wrestlings. And over time, as I've listened to stories over and over again and gone a bit deeper and talked with people about what that might mean for me, it has shaped the way I now think about being with you. It shaped the way I listen to people's stories. And in all of those issues, there's that one, and then there's other issues in society that I'm not always sure exactly where I land or exactly what I think about, but I can honestly tell you that every time I have wrestled with those issues and brought them to God and said, I don't know, help me do good work today. Just help me do good work today. I pray that every morning before I get out of bed. Lord, help me do good work today. When I do that, God says, yes, and Jesus. Yes, that is a story, and it's hard, and it's true. And Jesus says, yeah, that's a problem. We got to do something about that. And Jesus says, right? So I have learned, I've been learning not to be defensive, not to be cynical, but to receive stories that are different than mine with grace and curiosity and open-heartedness. And I think when I am doing that, the mystery is being revealed to me a little bit at a time. So the big mystery, yes, Jesus is everything. It's all coming together in him. That's how it's going to work. He will reconcile all things to himself. It's all about Jesus. He is at the center. And in my, as my work, as I wrestle with things in my work, as I participate in my work, as I speak the good in my work, encourage the good, bless others, learn from other people's stories, I am being enlarged. My faith is being strengthened. And the mystery, my micro mystery of my own little world, is slowly being revealed. In this sermon series of Ambassadors with Hearts on Fire, Mike is encouraging us to think about, so what does it look like for us to be in the world? What does it look like? And one of the things that happens over and over again in Scripture is this image of a garden, and God tending a garden and cultivating a garden. Gardens were places in particularly in ancient times, where you couldn't have a garden without a city because you had to be able to cultivate it. You needed all the necessary things. You needed the waterways. You needed the roads. You needed the workers. You had to have things in order to cultivate a good garden. And the cities had walls. There'd be the outer walls and then the inner walls. But cities were places of safety and security. And God refers to them over and over again in Scripture as a garden. And at different times, when he's been particularly cross with Israel, he refers to the breakdown of the city. You've destroyed my city. And in this part of Isaiah, he's really upset because his city had become run down. It had become a place of wilderness, not a garden, not a safe place, a place of wilderness. It was untethered and unjust and corrupt. So you'll see in here, when Isaiah is speaking God's words, he's saying, if you do away with the yoke of oppression, remember that justice and community element of education? And if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, the moral and spiritual element of education, then your light will rise in the darkness. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and strengthen your frame, and you will be like a garden. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and raise up the old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls. Peacemakers, maybe? Restorer of streets with dwellings. How much do we need places of security and safety for people in our communities? It's so good. It's so good. I find this so powerful. And this speaks not just to education, but anywhere that we are in the world, this is kind of what we're looking for, right? In my, we need people to care for our cities, to tend them as gardens and bring forth, with God's help, the beautiful, the good, and true, for the flourishing of all, so that the entire earth will be a garden of delight for God and people and things. In my work, I am pressed. I am pulled. I am becoming. I get to name the becoming that I see in others, and I am also experiencing becoming. And undergoing that with honesty and vulnerability, with integrity, will speak about my faith with truth and deeds. I can be an ambassador for good, encourage the good, speak blessing, so that love is revealed in my work. That's my story.